Columbia and its affiliated stations present radio's foremost laboratory of writing and production techniques, the Columbia Workshop. Every week, a different kind of radio show with special emphasis upon the unusual and the experimental. Today's workshop deals with one of the great unsolved problems of our age and civilization. The script was written by Fletcher Markle, whose work has been presented twice before on this series, and is directed by Albert Ward, with a special musical score by Frederick Steiner. The story... The Midnight Town is Full of Boys.
Tell you a few things about a boy named Joey Gill. He's 17 years of age, medium height, slim but not skinny, brown hair needing a cut, brown eyes. Living all his life so far in the town he was born in, a good-sized place. And anything he knows about other places he got from the movies, picture magazines, talking to people, or listening to the radio. Now, an ordinary description like that stands for a lot of Joey Gills. The thing I want you to know about the Joey Gill I'm talking about are just as ordinary, maybe, just as commonplace as that description, and not so very different from other boys like Joey. The way it was for Joey at home, for instance, how he was brought up. Take the mother of...
Joey! Take your fingers out of your mouth. That's no way to whistle. That's just dirty. Take them out.
Or the father of...
Joey, what do you want a musical instrument for a kid like you? There's enough trouble around here now.
Or the sister of...
Joey! How did this tissue paper get tangled up in my comb? Joey! Joey, come here!
Don't let me catch you acting up like that again, kid.
Go away! Leave us alone, Joey! Don't you stand there! That's bad, don't you know that, don't you?
I'm busy right now. Beat it.
I was never so embarrassed. I'll tell your father.
Get up, Joey!
Hold on. Stop it! Don't slap him around like that.
Well, I'm not going to have him blowing that lousy tin horn in this house. He's 10 years old now. He ought to know I like quiet here when I come home.
Just don't hit him like that.
He needs a lesson.
Shut up, Beth.
Joey.
What's the matter with you, Matt? You full of beer again? His lip's bleeding. Do you see that?
How can it? I hit him with my open hand.
It's on the inside. He must have cut it on his teeth. Go out to the kitchen, Joey.
Yeah, beat it. And don't go blowing that tin horn around the house again.
No, Joey didn't have much of a home with us. Matt and me were going to have a good big family, we said when we got married. But after Bess and Joey, it looked too hard. Matt was an upholsterer for Kohler and Abels then. I was working too. And Bess got left with Joey all day, starting when she was 7. We couldn't have left her with more kids. I was leery about more kids anyway. I had the feeling I couldn't depend on Matt staying with me. That was how it was until Joey got to be, 15 or 16. Joey was very musical, you know, right from when he was little. He played in the boys' band at high school, played cornet. He got free lessons at the school, you know. Played real good, too. But his father never let him practice up around the house. So he never got on like he should have. And then Matt left me like I thought he would. Left us all flat bang one night. Things happened fast after that. Bess was married. Joey quit school and got a job delivering for Kebler's drugstore. I got my divorce. The mortgage people gave us notice on the house, and when Mr. Brandt asked me to marry him, I said yes.
You're going to marry Mr. Brandt? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's it, Joey, yeah. Mr. Brandt asked me to marry him last week. He got a raise at the office and some holidays coming up.
He doesn't like me, does he?
Well, it's not that, Joey. It's just he isn't used to you.
He doesn't like me. Leave it at that.
Oh, Joey. Mr. Brandt wants to... Oh.
Yeah.
Joey...
What's going to happen to me? That's what you're trying to tell me, huh?
Joey, Joey, I thought maybe you could go live with Bess and George for a while. Bess said she'd just...
See what she could do. Yeah. I'll bet she was enthusiastic, all right.
Joey, don't make it tough now, please.
Well, it is tough, isn't it? I'm sorry. I'm glad about you and Mr. Brandt, Mom. That's swell for you.
Joey.
I'll get along, don't worry.
Your father, maybe, Joey.
The old man.
He's got his own place now, you know, his own store.
Yeah, best home.
I walked past it the other day. There's a sign in the window. Matthew Gill, furniture maker. Looks real nice.
I haven't seen the place yet. I haven't seen the old man either.
Maybe you could see him now and talk to him.
Maybe I'll have to, huh? We'll see.
Joey, please.
Don't worry. I'll get along.
Time when I was married to Joey's mother, I didn't pay much attention to him. I was working too hard. Nah, I'm no good with kids anyway. Bess, maybe, but Bess was different. The girls are different from boys when they're kids. Boys are noisy and full of trouble. Well, when I left Thelma, I left the factory, too. I set up my own store. I was free then, see, you know, living over the store, working on my own time. I could close when I wanted to, go to the fight, or have a night out for myself, you know. Well, I had this dog going about 3 or 4 months when Joe came in to see me. Hello, Joey.
I just thought I'd drop around.
Uh-huh. How's your mother these days and Bess?
Bess is fine.
Yeah. You going to live with them?
No. That's what I came to see you about. You got any room here? You need any help? Well, could I do some work for you?
Yeah. Well, what could you do?
Anything. I can learn anything at all.
You still got your bicycle?
No, I sold my bike.
You could hardly deliver furniture jobs on a bike anyway, could you? What did you sell it for?
The last 4 payments on my Cornette.
Oh, no. You're not going to blow that thing around here, kid.
You'll never hear it. Not around here.
Well, horn's no good in the furniture business anyway. Do you think you could learn to pack a chair?
Sure.
And you want to live here, huh?
Please.
Oh, I can't pay you much.
I can eat here, can't I, and sleep?
Not even apprentice wages, you know, if you're going to get your room and board.
That's all right. Just give me a chance.
Of course, you're going to have nights off, whole nights, if you like.
Just give me a chance.
All right, here's a customer. Stick around, Joey.
Sure.
While he was growing up, Joey and I didn't get along too well. I even hated him sometimes. He was too much a responsibility. But I brought up Joey almost as much as Ma. And if you can call it a bringing up, the kind of life we had in that family. Asking me to marry him. I guess George did the same for me as Mr. Brandt did in marrying Mom. It was good to get out. Joey was a problem for us, of course. Who'd he go with? Who'd take care of him? I liked Joey after he was out from under my feet and I could look at him as another person. I never did think his music would get him anywhere, but I guess you couldn't say he didn't try. George liked him better, too, when he wasn't just my noisy kid brother anymore. We bumped into him on the street one day after he'd gone to live with his father.
Hello, Joey. Hey, you're looking swell, kid.
Thanks, George.
How you doing, Joey?
Oh, working hard, Bess. Hey, you should see me packing a chair.
The old man drinking, Joey?
Oh, a little. Whenever it's a lot, I clear out for the day.
Not much changed, I guess, huh?
Oh, a few things. He don't push me around anymore.
No? Well, that's swell, Joey.
Yeah. He better not try.
Still got your cornet, Joey? Still playing?
Oh, sure. I'm trying to save up for lessons, popular lessons. I can work at it then.
You mean get a job?
Sure, dance band stuff. I know most of the boys at the Alhambra.
The Alhambra?
Yeah, you know, honey, the ballroom.
Oh, that place. You go there often, Joey?
Well, sure. I know the band. And Sandy Carlson, the leader, owns the place. I get in.
Oh.
It's 10 to 6, Bess.
Is it? Oh, we better go, Joey. She's got a feeding. Why don't you come and see her one of these days?
Yeah. Better drop up sometime, Joey.
Sure. I'd like to sometime.
Well, so long, Joey.
Uh-huh. Bye now.
So long, Bess. George?
That's what they told me when I went to see them. Joey's mother and father and Bess, the sister. So now you know something about the way it was for Joey at home. Well, it's pretty straightforward so far, isn't it? An unhappy kid with a sordid family life, interrupted education, frustrated ambitions. Sad story, but more common than you might think. I talked to everybody I could track down who knew Joey and who'd be of any use. Some of his friends, a couple of girls, Mrs. Murray Fabian, and the band leader who manages the Alhambra, Sandy Carlson.
Joey was a nice enough kid at first. Not like most of the hangers-on we get around here. He got to know my boys and was crazy to play in the band. He used to come in with his cornet and wait around by the stand until closing, midnight. He'd get up there and practice the brass parts in our arrangements while the tables were being stacked. If any of the boys stayed around to jam it up for an hour or so, he'd get in on it as often as they'd let him. He didn't have much training, only school band stuff. So he wasn't much at reading dance music. But he was all right when he was just making it up. Kept after me about a job for a long time. But he wasn't that good. Anyway, he was only a kid. After a while, well, Joey got to be just one of the stooges. The jukebox bunch. Part-time jobs, crap games, poker. You know, just hanging around.
Go to school with Joey. But after he quit, I didn't see him for nearly a year. Not until I was having a sandwich downtown in the Top Hat one Saturday lunch, and we talked. He came around to the house and took me out a few times after that. Movies, dancing, bowling, and all. I thought for a while he was going to ask me to go steady. But Joey liked to be out late, and I always had to be in before 12, so it was kind of difficult for us. I mean, arguing about it and that. He just never wanted to relax and spend a quiet evening at home. That was the trouble, I guess. Anyway, he stopped calling me after we had a fight about it.
We got the time, Grace?
About 8:30, I think. Nice out here in the porch. Come, Joey?
Yeah. It must be more than 8:30.
I don't know. Hey, is your watch broken or something?
I lost in the crap game Tuesday night.
Oh, Joey.
I'll get it back. Hey, let's go to the Alhambra.
I thought we were going to listen to the radio. Betty Davis is on at 9.
With your family sitting around? Not me. I want to dance.
You just stand there and listen mostly. Talk to those musicians and their friends.
All right, listen then. I want to listen.
We can listen to Betty Davis.
I mean music. I want to see the boys. You know what I mean.
Don't you like it around our house here at all, Joey?
Well, what's a house got? You coming?
I can't, Joey. They said I've been out too much lately.
All right. Go sit with them, then. I'm going.
Joey, please.
So long.
What? Will I see you again?
I don't know. I'll be around. Joey Gill? Yeah, we had a room together at Mrs. McConaughey's for a couple of months. That was after he had a big fight with his old man and cleared out of the store where he was living. We worked together, too, in the storing room at the Stick and Span Laundry. Then Joey got a job on the trucks. And first thing I knew, he was in $30. 2 weeks pay to one of the drivers. He had to quit. He packed up that night, and I never saw him again. Oh, once at the Alhambra. That was quite a while ago. Whatever happened to him?
Joey was 3 years younger than me, 17. Only a kid, really. But he used to make a big fuss about me and buy me things and treat me real good. And it wasn't only me, any girl he liked. And he didn't ask anything back. He just wanted to around. Joey was more interested in gambling than anything else. And it wasn't the thrill either. It was the money. For clothes, for fun, for a trip out of town he was always going to take and never did. Sometimes he was up and sometimes down. But he couldn't stay up on the game long enough. And, well, a girl gets plenty fed up playing third fiddle to a pair of dice. I did anyway.
All right, now. Give me a point. Give me a point. Just a point. A nine. Nine's not so tough.
Come on, Joey. Let's get something to eat.
Hold it, Kay. All right. Here they go, fellas.
Bobby's right coming out. You're on.
Nine. Niner from Carolina. Carolina Niner, come to Joey. Don't let me down.
Seven. Hello, seven.
All right, so I lost once.
Joey.
Your dice, Sarge.
Sam's the name. Just call me Mister.
What are you shooting, Mr. Sam? Only a couple more, Kay.
Shooting ten.
Wall Street plunger. What are you taking, chick?
I'll take five.
Bert?
I'm clean, Joey.
And I'm thinking.
Okay. Five here. Shoot, Sam.
Okay. Here he goes.
Breathe on him, Sam.
A six? Boxcar.
Oh, that's tough.
You should have talked to them,
yes,
Sam.
Yeah. Yes.
What are you shooting?
Well, I ain't got no more dough, but I got a watch. Watch worth about $20.
$20? $10. That's my watch. You gave me $10 on it.
Oh, ten, was it?
Yeah, it was ten, Sam.
Make it ten and I'll cover, otherwise pass the bones.
Okay, Joey, for ten. All right, give me a natural, give me a natural, give me a natural.
What luck? Crap, two in a row, it ain't possible.
You're passing them, Sam?
No.
But you ain't got no dough.
No, but I got something else. Now, what am I fated for this?
A gun.
Christ. You hadn't ought to be packing that, Sam.
It's a German gun, Mauser. Eddie Rankin and me picked up one each in St. Lowe.
What do you figure it's worth?
It depends. You could get $50 once. Rankin sold his a couple of months after his discharge for 25. Old fade me $25 on the gun.
All right, Sam. I'll fade you. Shoot!
Okay. Give me a break, give me a break. 7 or 11, that's all. 7?
I ain't never seen it happen in all my life. 3 craps in a row.
Joey, for crying out loud.
Push me over the gun, chick, I'm leaving.
Yeah, sure.
Joey!
It's coming, Kay. Worth 25, huh, Sam?
25, easy.
Okay.
You better pass the bone, Sam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
sister told me she hadn't seen him for months after she met him on the street that day and asked him to come and see the baby. Only heard about him now and then. And then when he finally came around, it wasn't to see the baby at all. It was to borrow money. And that was only about a week or so before he... About a week before the night in Fabian's store.
It was a Saturday night. They're open till midnight on Saturday. The only delicatessen in the neighborhood that is. It was just 12. And Murray was turning off the window lights and the neon sign the beer company gave us. I was in the back making some coffee. I heard this knock on the door and Murray shouted out, "They're closed now." But the knock came again. And I heard Murray swear a little and go over and open the door. I looked out between the curtain and the doorway that leads into the back. We can see the front door, you know, without people seeing much of us. And it was this boy.
We're closed now. We close at midnight.
I'm sorry. I just wanted some cheese. Cheese and rye bread and a quart of milk. We're fresh out at our place.
All right. Come in.
Thanks.
What kind of cheese do you want?
Oh, any kind. Any kind at all.
Yes, hey, there's not much choice left, you know. Saturday's a big day.
Yeah. Big business Saturday, I guess.
Oh, sure, always. Now, look, I can give you some of this. It's, hey, what are you doing with that?
Don't put your hands up. Just stand right where you are and open that cash register.
Where did you get that gun?
Do what I tell you and shut up.
You don't know what you're doing.
Do what I tell you.
Don't be crazy, kid. Give me that gun.
Don't move. Hey!
Give it to me now.
No, hey, let go.
Officer Cowley's report and what he told me privately fills in the rest of the picture. Joey ran out of Fabian's store with Mrs. Fabian's screams behind him, and he ran almost straight into Cowley's arms. Joey saw the uniform in front of him and stopped dead and stood there trembling and scared, cold in his belly, listening to Mrs. Fabian screaming. He started to put the gun in a side pocket of his jacket, and he was crying, and Cowley caught him as he was falling to his knees.
Steady, kid. Another one. That's the first thing I thought when I grabbed the kid under his shoulders and pulled him up straight and took his gun. Another one. No resistance, no chase, no gunplay this time. But here was another one. I kept thinking that when I shouted to the woman in the store, Mrs. Fabian, and found out what had happened. And I thought that when the kids from the jukebox joint down at the corner started to run towards us. Somebody must have heard the shot or seen the boy and me, and all of a sudden the street was full of them. I blew for Kaminsky.
All right, now go on, now scram. Scram, will you? Turn back.
Hey, what happened? What'd you do?
Yeah, what did he do?
What did you do, officer?
Another one. He was blubbering, you know. And I hiked his arm up behind his back and hustled him down to the box at the other corner and called in. I blew again while I was waiting for the precinct to answer, but there was no sign of Kaminsky. He must have been blocks away. I put cuffs on the kid with his arms around the post.
Hey, who is it, Charlie? What'd you do anyway, huh?
Never mind. Move along, will you? Beat it. Beat it.
Hello, Sarge. Collie here.
I ain't never seen him before. Can't be from around here. Really balling, ain't he? Like he was 10 years old.
Oh, he got caught, didn't he?
What'd he do?
I gave him the dope and asked for a wagon, and all the time I was thinking, another one. Another one. Yeah, it's been tough for Kaminsky and me, you know. Last few months, especially. There was a McManus kid. He slugged this old man with a baseball bat and broke his head in. And the Apennines. Arson and armed robbery.
What's the stick-up?
No kidding.
Yeah, Don Fabian.
Fabian? What's that so?
Danny was just down there.
Yeah? Frankie Hodge, 3 months back from reform school and then in again. This time to the pen. And the Garriento twins, shoplifting and resisting arrest and all that. The book. And me and Kaminsky have been having a time, I tell you.
That's some jacket he's wearing, huh, Tim?
Hey, pipe that jacket.
Let's go, Tim. I don't feel good.
Oh, come on, stick around.
Now another one, I thought. This Gil kid. I never even seen him around before. Why don't we get all the dirty work? That's what we want to know, us and the courts. Why don't somebody do something about him before we have to? I'm fed to the teeth with this job. So's Kaminsky. Kids, kids, kids. All the time it's kids these days. What are their people doing, sleeping 24 hours? Trouble's economics, the books say. Their people are too poor or working too hard and they haven't got time for kids. Yeah. Or they're too drunk or too lazy or too stupid. Not enough schools, the books say. Not enough parks. Not enough decent places for the kids to go and have fun. Yeah. Not enough homes, I say. I don't mean houses. Homes. Whose fault is it? Whose fault is it that we get the dirty end of the stick, Kaminsky and me and the rest of us? How come we're the fall guys for the repair work on kids like Joey Gill? Another one. That's all I could think about.
Are you going to leave him there all night, Charlie, huh?
Yeah, with the wagon, Charlie.
Hold on, will you? Now break it up. It ain't funny, see? Go on, Hall.
That's it. You heard why he's chatting a minute ago. And so do I. Now beat it. Hey, Tim, Danny, Charlie, go on. Beat it.
Well, it's about time you got here, Kaminsky. Now get rid of these kids. I got to go back and see Mrs. Fabian.
Well, that's about all. Being Joey Gill's lawyer, I've naturally talked to a lot of people about him, and I had quite a few of them come to the court and repeat what they had to say. I tried to construct the clearest possible picture of how it was for Joey up until the night he shot and killed Murray Fabian. 2 weeks ago, a mixed jury found Joey guilty of murder in the second degree, and tomorrow morning his sentence will be pronounced. He won't get the death penalty. In this state, he's too young for that. But they'll take a lot of years from him. Years he can never replace. Like the McManus boy, and the Apenninis, and Frankie Hodge, and the Guariento twins. They're not so different. And yet they're all different. Yes, and those boys who stood around and stared at Joey handcuffed to the post that night, and all the others like them. Boys like Joey himself. What about them? Who's going to be next? And why?
Columbia Workshop, radio's foremost laboratory of writing and production techniques, has presented Fletcher Markle's drama of juvenile delinquency, The Midnight Town is Full of Boys. Today's workshop was directed by Albert Ward for Columbia and its affiliated stations, and the special musical score was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. CBS cordially invites you to listen tomorrow and the following Sunday to Stars in the Afternoon, a second annual preview of Columbia programs which you'll be hearing during the fall and winter. Stars in the Afternoon, presenting many of your favorite radio stars in a full hour and a half program, will be heard on Sunday from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Next week, because of the approaching World Series and in response to popular demand, the Columbia Workshop will repeat its production of Irving Tytle's whimsical story, The Day That Baseball Died. And Howard G. Barnes will again direct. Don Baker speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.